Technology is only 10% of the experience. You, my customer service rep, my mortgage lender, my consultant, you are 90%. And they have to know that because they start using that as a crutch. Technology can never build a rapport, show empathy, make a brilliant comeback when we drop the ball, but you can. And just as a leadership today, businesses are de-emphasizing the importance of the employee. We got to get back and teach them that they're the experience.
Hello, and welcome back to the CEO Coaching International Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is John DeJulius. John is the President and Chief Revolution Officer of the DeJulius Group. His company has become a leading authority in the field of customer service and brand experience. What you're going to hear today is a presentation that John delivered at a recent Make Big Happen Summit. And we're sharing this presentation with you to give you a taste of what you can expect at the upcoming Make Big Happen Summit, which will take place on April 24th through the 27th at the Fontainebleau Hotel in beautiful Miami Beach, Florida. You can register to attend the summit by visiting ceocoachinginternational.com. In this presentation, John says most companies get customer service all wrong. He says they're trying to de-emphasize the importance of the employee and replace them with chatbots and AI and other technology. But that technology will never outperform a well-trained human who steps in when your customer needs personalized help. And John shows how you can deepen your customer relationships and focus on creating a memorable experience that makes your price irrelevant and helps you retain clients for life. With that, please enjoy the presentation by John DeJulius.
Making price irrelevant doesn't mean you could double your prices, fees, rates, or even raise them 30% and not lose existing and potential customers. But this is what making price irrelevant looks like. Based on the experience, your brand, not just one person, but anyone I come in contact with, consistently delivers, I have no idea what your competition charges. Think about that. Every one of us in here, even in this room, we're price sensitive. If you've been like me, I've been the idiot that drove 3 extra miles to save 50 cents on something, not realizing I just lost in that exchange. But every one of us has a business, a vendor, a partner that we have no idea how they compare to their competition because we are so loyal to them for the relationship, the expertise that they put. That's where I want to live. I want to be on that side to my clients. That's where you want to live. So my first business, we opened 26 years ago, small salon and spa in Cleveland, Northeast Ohio, that's grown, and now it's a chain of upscale salons and spas. I'm not active in them anymore. But just so you understand, Cleveland's not LA, it's not Miami, it's not Chicago. The average haircut in Cleveland for a woman is $32. Yeah, you guys need to fly to Cleveland. Our least expensive, after a hairdresser goes through training for 12 to 18 months, she goes on the floor, the least expensive level one designer is 50. So our least expensive is significantly higher than the average. And we have 3 or 4 hairdressers well over, they're at 125. And we're the busiest. The ones at 125, you have to wait 3 weeks to 3 months for their first opening. However, a few years ago, January, it's slow in January in all retail businesses. A salon 4 doors down from one of our locations put this sign in their window. We do $10 haircuts. And my staff freaked. Oh my God, we're going to go out of business. We got to start discounting. We got to start sending out coupons. I said, no. We don't play those games. Right? Let's focus on the experience we have. Let's focus on what we say people get. Let's improve it. Let's make it consistent. Let's be brilliant at the basics. And you're going to be really bummed to know that they went out of business 6 months later. Don't play that game if it's not your game. We do not compete in price wars. We compete in experience wars. A lot less players, and not too many know how to do it. Now, I do believe in price match guarantee. So if you're paying attention, I should sound like the biggest hypocrite because I'm telling you to make price irrelevant, but price match guarantee. This is what I want every one of my employees in my three companies to think. This is what I want everyone in this room to take back to your team members. This is the attitude I want everyone to have. We are the ultimate experts and experienced providers at what we do. And we will not be oversold. In fact, if you can find it higher somewhere else, we will raise our prices and match it. Right? Here's why. If you tell me there's a salon in Northeast Ohio that charges more than us, that doesn't mean, oh, they charge 135, we're going to charge 136. No, it doesn't work like that. That would freak me out. I would run down there, get a haircut, sit in their waiting room, and find out how they're justifying a $135 haircut experience, and then I take it back and raise our game and raise our prices. If Mark Moses tells me that there's a customer service consultant that charges more than us, that'd freak me out. Is she better expertise, better presenter, better customization? I would figure it out and charge Mark more, right? But here's the biggest thing, and write this down. This is an exercise I want you to go back and do with your team because it's happening every day to them. Someone's calling your customer service rep, your salesperson, and saying, how much do you charge? And they quote it. Whoa, I can get that from them online somewhere else for 10, 15% next. That's happening. What do they say to it is the key. Now, if they say, oh, well, we'll throw in this free shipping, an extra month of support, whatever that is. No, you just shrunk. I want somebody to ask me about price. You want somebody, but you have to train your, you know how to answer that, but you're not the one getting asked that. Because if you ask me about price, after my answer, you're going to walk away saying, whoa, I can't afford to go cheaper. I can't afford to go cheaper. You need to have that answer articulated so your employees aren't apologetic. They're proud and they're able to articulate that the customer or potential customer realizes, whoa, with your expertise, peace of mind, experience, zero risk, I can't afford to go cheaper. And my favorite quote to this is, discounting is the tax you pay for being average. So if that hurts, it's supposed to. Discounting is a tax you pay for being average. I have a client, franchisee, cleans carpets. Well, that was their primary business. And I don't know how long ago, he was just telling me this story. Last 20 years, carpet has become less and less, and hardwood floors and have become more and more. Sales started going down. So the franchisor started having everyone discount. So they started discounting until there was nothing left. My client did it at first, and then as a franchisee said, screw it. I don't believe in this. And he figured out new revenue streams. Guess what? Now they clean hardwood floors and tile and drapes and other things. We've got to figure out revenue streams instead of chasing it. So does relationships and customer satisfaction really do things besides warm and fuzzy? And everyone in this room will only care about this slide. And I'm okay with that. 11-year period. Watermark research compared the stock performances of three different parties. S&P 500 from 2007 to 2017. Customer experience laggers, the worst 10 to 15% in every industry, to the top 10 to 15%. So over that 11-year period, the S&P produced you 138% return on investment. Pretty good. If you're one of the worst, less than half, 63. If you're one of the best, 183. I like that. That's return on experience.
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com.
So how do we create that in our businesses? Most of the stuff is you know, or you wouldn't be here. The keys to building relationships. But is it part of your training? We've got to be authentic. Everyone has bullshit detectors. And they know is if you're asking questions just so you can get it back on you or to what you sell or anything, we really got to be authentic. The best people are curious. Curious about subjects that don't necessarily interest them, but want to know why the heck you love fly fishing. Sounds boring as hell, but I want to learn because you are really passionate about it. Must be a great listener. Must have incredible empathy. And finally, must genuinely love people. That's my only hiring requirement. You got to love people. I could teach you anything else. And there's ways to find out if you like people. Digital intelligence is up. Emotional intelligence is down. Because of the digital revolution, many members of the younger generation lack the necessary people skills of previous generations. All right, that's obvious. But look at this, and it's probably happening in your business. Almost 40% of us in the U.S. workforce have a boss that's younger than them. Do you have young bosses? Probably. Well, Chip Conley says, power is cascading to the young like never before because of our increasing reliance on digital intelligence. Yet, we expect these young leaders to somehow miraculously embody the relationship wisdom we older workers have decades to learn, yet can't microwave emotional intelligence. We got to teach it. They're not getting it in school. They're not getting it at home, and that's not a criticism to parenting. It's just where we're at. So we have to address it as business leaders. Those who understand that the human touch is the most important part of any experience, especially a great customer experience, will flourish. Success is about creating and building human connections. So here's what CEOs say. And I'm going to see what you say and see how you match. So there was a survey done asking CEOs, how many of you in here feel that relationships, not only yours, but everyone in your businesses, your sales staff, internal, external, vendors, partners, your relationships, is most important to your company's success? Raise your hand. It's not a trick question. Keep them up just for a second. What's the percentage of hands in the room? Can you tell? 70? Good. Okay. 89% of CEOs surveyed said relationships is the most important thing. Next question. How many of you have a specific strategy to develop and strengthen relationships? Not just yours. You are masters at, but teaching your employees to do that. Raise your hand. 10, 5. It's most important. It's almost 9 out of 10, yet not even 1 out of 10 have a specific strategy developed for their company to build them. So what are our key relationships? To our leaders, our executive team, our future generation, our succession, our employees, our customers, our vendor partners, the community, and then our personal and our employees' personal. They got to be happy. They got to understand how to develop relationships. And it's our job to help them. So you take a relationship report card, and you'll get this. If you can't wait, email me. I'll send it to you. But what this does, and every leader in your company should have this, and even every sales staff. And so it has three categories. Important to my success, mine, I might be the sales, the account executive, manager of the warehouse, whatever it may be, call center. And so you rank them. Order of importance. So of all those, I got to rank what relationship is number one and what's least, even though it's important, in order. And then finally, how good are those relationships right now? And then you see where you got work to do, and you develop a plan for it. Our employees, our customer-facing employees, That could be a consultant lawyer, account executive, to a cashier. They're all customer-facing employees. Have a lack of empathy at no fault of their own. And here's why. Most employees do not know what world-class customer service is. Right? Most of us didn't grow up staying at five-star resorts, getting a Mercedes-Benz when we turned 16, getting a $150 haircut, flying first class. But the first jobs we had, the first jobs our employees have, are expected to give that type of experience to those types of clients. It's not fair. Employees are not your customers. Most businesses in the room are not serving. Mr. Bennett, your average age of your employees? 25. And your average age of the customers they are dealing with?
50.
What does a 25-year-old know about a 50-year-old? 25-year-old doesn't know what to do with their time after work. 50-year-old, 36 hours wouldn't help too much in a day, right? Struggles, health, aging parents. I mean, I don't got to tell you. It's not their fault. And it doesn't mean we change who we hire. Employers are not looking at it from the customer's perspective. They're looking at what's easiest from us, and that's our fault as leaders. You compare yourself to the rest of the industry. That's the worst. You're not world-class just because you're better than everyone else in your industry. The best airline in the U.S. still sucks, right? And finally, we become numb. We refer to our customers 201B for a hospital. That's a room and bed number. No, that's my mother. We refer to, you know, our client as the keynote in Scottsdale or order number. So how do you fix this? So one of the people here in the audience is New Day USA, client of mine, client of CEO Coaching. You go, they have 500-600 staff. This is a picture of them. It looks like a college campus. Young, hungry, professionals, making a ton of money as mortgage lenders, all in their 20s. Their customer, Vietnam veterans. What does a 26-year-old know about what it was like to serve in Vietnam? Again, doesn't mean we change who we hire, but we got to help them understand. So create a day in the life of your customer that totally shows what the customer's going through, pain points. So when you do pick up the phone, you do come in contact, you have more compassion and empathy for them. So all these brands shown here, many of them are in the room, they've all done this. So if you know any of them, ask them. They've done it really well. I'm not going to spend any time on this, but they do a great job at creating compassion and empathy for their customer-facing employees so I'm more present. I realize how important my expertise is going to be to your day, to your business, to your life. So the other big myth that most employees have is it's about the results. If the steak is cooked medium rare like you asked, if the order comes on time accurate, if your tooth stops hurting, you'll be happy. And results, outcomes have the least to do with customer satisfaction. Scientifically proven. I expected a good restaurant. You prepare my steak medium, medium rare. If I get it, I'm not calling my friend saying, you wouldn't believe it, medium rare. I expect the order to be accurate and on time. I expect any good dentist to get my tooth to stop hurting. Results have the least to do with customer loyalty. It's about the micro experiences of when I called up, when I checked in, that the order was incomplete and no one bothered to tell me. And I have a client driving 45 minutes on Tuesday because the order's arriving, but the product they're coming for is on back order that you knew about and you didn't bother to communicate that with me. All those things is what determine customer loyalty. And your employees think it's about the results. What are you complaining about? It came like you asked. Anybody know what this stands for? If you do, if you can figure it out, you get an extra book. URX. What's it stand for? Don't overthink it. What's the first two words? You are experience. You are the experience. This should be your theme for the year, for a quarter, I don't care. But what's happening with the digital disruption? And we're talking to our employees about the new technology and our website and One Touch and chatbots and all this stuff, the chandelier. And then we've just put $1 million into the showroom, whatever it may be. Is we are sending a message to our employees, it's not about them. Technology is only 10% of the experience. You, my customer service rep, my mortgage lender, my consultant, you are 90%. And they have to know that because they start using that as a crutch. Technology can never build a rapport, show empathy, make a brilliant comeback when we drop the ball, but you can. And just as a leadership today, businesses are de-emphasizing the importance of the employee. We got to get back and teach them that they're the experience. So the art of listening, there's a science to it. And there's a myth that great listeners just shut up and let the other person talk. And that's not true at all. So the thing I read here in the Harvard Business Review is don't be a sponge, be a trampoline. And what that looks like is if you ask a question and don't ask two or three follow-up questions, odds aren't you weren't listening. That's what a trampoline is. Explain that more. Why? A good listener becomes invisible, makes the respondent the centerpiece. A lot of you know this, but your employees don't. We got to train it. The best way to persuade someone is with our ears. This is a good one. Can you keep quiet longer than 18 seconds? They say the average expert, be it a consultant, doctor, lawyer, anything, interrupts their customer within 18 seconds. I do this because I've heard this question a million times. It's not the first time. So it's like, yeah, and I want to get in there and give you the answer because I have it. It's hard. And it's hard for when an employee might come see us and have a question, a dilemma, a situation. Can we keep quiet longer than 18 seconds? You can't be listening if you're talking. Never miss a good chance to shut up. So some conversation nevers. Never multitask. He comes in to see me, put the phone in the drawer. Never ask a question because you're dying to answer it yourself. Hey, how was your weekend? Good, good. You know what I did? Never ask a question and hijack the answer. Never finish the other person's sentence. I do this all the time. So one of my employees will say, if you can't say it in 5 words or less, don't bother telling them, which is a horrible reputation to have, right? You got to bottom line it. So if someone comes and they're saying, John, is there any chance a week from Saturday, you need off, right? Because I think it's horrible. It's horrible. I mean, this is a painful book writing. This is probably my number one culprit. I bet you it's yours. Because I didn't do this, never steal their thunder. I didn't do this meaning to. I thought that I'd say, hey, what did you do on vacation last week? And you said, you know, I took my kids to Disney World for the first time. Oh my God, we have a place there. And so I think what I'm doing is just, you know, making a connection, but now she doesn't really want to tell me how special Disney was, right? I bet you we all do this. And it just, shut up. Oh my God, tell me about Disney. Did your kids love it? And if she asks later, have you ever, yeah, I better love it. But by saying it's totally stealing their thunder. Because what can she tell me about Disney now? Some conversation always. Remove any distraction like technology. Demonstrate your full attention. Whether it be to a customer, an employee. What I want that my employee is so focused must be present to win. I love that term. That someone could blow a firecracker off next to you, and I didn't hear it because me and Cynthia, she's the only one I'm worried about. Love this one. Listen with your eyes. Listen with your eyes. Be an active listener. Ask questions. Always ask fascinating and probing questions and follow-up questions, even more questions, and be silent. Some more conversation always. Always show empathy and support in a non-judgmental way. Always show patience. Let the other person speak their piece before finishing their thought and feel heard. Always wait 2 seconds before responding so you process. Always be in a learning mode. Everyone has something to teach. Always make the person the speaking the centerpiece. Always collect forward and document it. I'll explain what that is in a few seconds. Always commit to a follow-up when it's called for or an action plan. I will get back to you by end of day tomorrow. Under promise, so if you think you can get back to them today, tell them tomorrow. And if you don't have an answer for them by end of day tomorrow, call them up with an answer that you don't have an answer. So, how do we become the brand customers can't live without? I love this metaphor. Are you in your client's bomb shelter? Are you in the CEO foxhole? And what that means is if your client is under attack, they have two foxholes, two bomb shelters. A personal one, hopefully they're taking their spouse and kids, most of their kids. And then they have a professional one. And in their professional bomb shelter, they can only fit 2 or 3 vendor partners. Would you be one of them? Printer, no, I don't care. I can get that elsewhere. Probably for cheaper. Count, no, I don't care. Hope he blows up. But I can't think of life without Sheldon. He's got to be in there. If I got to start over tomorrow, start something brand new, I can't let anything happen to him. How do you get there? What's ABC stand for? No. Always be connecting. Build relationships, not networking. I hate networking. Social capital is a result of long-term, continuous relationships. Building one of the most powerful resources a person can have. You build social capital by always putting the other person's goal first and foremost in every business relationship. So a partner they can't live without. I actually have a friend, very successful entrepreneur in Columbus, that one time told me he hopes he dies before his banker. What? He goes, I wouldn't change the color of my office wall without consulting with him first. That's what a trusted advisor. He goes, and I'm pretty sure he knows nothing about paint and color, but I know he knows someone that does. Wow, that's where I want to be. That someone says, I hope I die before John. Right? I mean, that's a trusted partner. So you got to make sure you're employed. Make sure we're hiring employees, but make sure we and our employees are demonstrating this. Love what they do, but make it obvious. People better make it obvious that they love what they do. Like my biggest pet peeve, I just did a little vlog on it, is when you go up to someone, how you doing? Fine. Fine sucks. I don't want an accountant that's fine. I don't want a doctor that's okay. So far, so good. It's 7 in the morning. What do you mean, so far, so good? Like, what are you waiting for? I want someone who's amazing. And guess what? I don't care what happened. You got a flat tire this morning? You're amazing. Relatively speaking, you're amazing. I'm not worried about this room, but we got to teach our employees because our employees will say that. I went and got a massage at my own spa. Walk in, the massage therapist comes out. I'm like, hey, how are you? She goes, oh, I have a splitting headache. Why would you tell me that? Like, I'm convinced I'm getting a shitty massage today. I don't tip shitty massages. Get to know your customer. Be more committed to the success of your customer than they are. Don't share how you can help them until you completely understand what their goals and problems are. Make sure your clients never meet anyone smarter at what they do than you. That's huge. Don't take our clients for granted. Every time we speak to them, make sure our employees are reminding them about their education and expertise, because like us, they're meeting people. Be honest and transparent, which means go ugly early. If it's not good news, tell them. Be honest and transparent. Be a resource broker. So when I wrote this in my book, after everything I write, I got to give examples. And he doesn't even know this, but the person I wrote an example to this is Sheldon. He is a partner you can't live without. I mean, he has so much social capital. If you deal with Sheldon, every week Sheldon's introducing me to someone. It might be, sometimes it's just, you know, I think you guys, you could help him. I don't know why I'm introducing you, but I think you guys need to meet. And I always take Sheldon's word, and it's always beneficial. He just, it's like, you know, he worries about my business more than I do. That's pretty cool. That's really cool. I'm sure all the coaches are like that. Okay, here's the big how. So I did a TED Talk called Meet as Strangers, Leave as Friends. How do you build relationships? Now, we know how, but we got to systematize it. We got to teach people how to do it. So the first thing is, make sure that everyone knows everyone they, us, come in contact with has an invisible sign above their head that says, make me feel important. Our children, we get home, the person we're getting on in the elevator, total stranger. There is no skill other than breathing in oxygen. I believe there's no skill, and I'll argue this with anyone, more important for us to teach, to work on, than the ability to build an instant rapport with others, whether they be a customer, acquaintance, employee, or total stranger. But nowhere is this taught. It's not taught in school. It's not taught at home. It's got to be taught by us, because they aren't going to have it. And it's human nature to be preoccupied with our own world. It's my flight. It's my client that's upset. It's my son that got in trouble. But when we can teach ourselves and train our employees to put the focus on the other person, that's when the magic happens. How many people agree with what Stephen Covey said here? People don't listen with the intent of understanding. They listen with the intent of replying. Agree? So scientists studied the human brain and found that it took the human brain a minimum of 0.6 seconds to formulate a response to something said to it. A minimum of 0.6 seconds. Then they studied hundreds, thousands of conversations and found the average gap between people talking was 0.2 seconds. One-third the time our brain will allow us. How's that possible? I have my answer long before you stop talking. I'm just waiting for you to come up for air. So what should we do when we talk to others?
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
That's a great movie. Can we just watch that movie? The greatest gift we can give anyone is the gift of our attention, right? That's the greatest gift. So I love asking people, and I want you to ask this to your employees. How many people here feel that you're really good at building an instant rapport with a total stranger? Raise your hand. Wow. This is the least room that's ever raised amount of hands. And honestly, I think you all are great, or you wouldn't be at this level. But usually when I have, you know, one company, I got to look and see if there's a hand not up. And then I call bullshit. Because just because you ate lunch with someone, met someone at a party, a networking event last night, and you spent 30, 45 minutes with them, doesn't mean you built a rapport. You could have spent, and when I say you, your employee, you could have spent 45 minutes talking about yourself. So here's how anyone proves to me. Here's how I prove to myself. Here's how my employees, here's how my kids, when they meet you, have to prove to me that they developed a relationship. They have to know two or more things of Ford. Write this down, please, if you already don't know it. If they know two or more things of someone's Ford, they not only built a relationship, they own the relationship, because to each of us, our own personal Ford is our hot buttons. It's what makes us talk really fast. There's certain things about my Ford you don't want to ask me unless you have 2 hours, because I'm going to tell you, right? What's F stand for? Are they married? Do they have kids? How old are they? O? What do they do for a living? What's their title? How long they've been doing it? R. Recreation. It's a lot of people's most favorite, right? Runner, coaches, little league, you know, whatever it is. I mean, this is, people get real passionate about that. And D, dreams. That's huge. That's where you really get emotional connection. I'm going to talk about that a little later about employees. You know, two or more things if someone's Ford, you own them. So the focus needs to be on them. Needs to be, and we got to train our employees. If you meet my kids, they know that they just talked to JP. I'm going to say, is JP married? How old are his kids? So they're not just throwing up on JP about themselves. When we travel as a family, we play the Ford game. Who can find out the most personal information of total strangers? We will be driving that poor Uber driver crazy. But you won't believe the magic that happens when you get someone to start talking about, really talking and going deeper and deeper. So we have Ford. We work on Ford. A lot of the clients, that logos I showed you, New Day, Worldwide Express, they've built Ford in their CRM systems. So, and if you're B2B, you got the easiest. You know where they live, your comp. It's very few people. You don't have the Ford. It could be where they live, the last order, whatever it may be. Now, if you're calling to schedule an appointment, my call center, I don't want them forwarding you, right? That'd be like a stalker checklist. So we have Ford, you know, pads for people that work in offices, mine, our call center. But you don't have to ask these questions in that scenario. People overshare. Someone will call up, Cynthia will call up and say, I need to change my 3 o'clock on Wednesday because my daughter's soccer team made it to district. Bam. Or what we do wrong is we duck and bob and weave from great customer intelligence and we say, how about Thursday at 4? Versus capturing that, then when she checks in, a totally different person says, how'd your daughter's soccer team do? She forgot she even told us. Ever bought a new car so excited because you've never seen it in this color, this model, until an hour later? Did 10 other people have the same idea as you today and go out and buy that color, that model? No. The difference is your mind is now primed to see what's always been there. So that's what good Ford techniques do. It primes our mind to hear and see things we don't normally pay attention to. So by having a Ford tab, a Ford desktop, I have a Ford tab in my thing. So as soon as I get done talking, I turn it away and update it or put it in my app. I had a sales coach that spoke at a conference we put on talk about this, and I loved it. He says, start every conversation with, tell me something good. And the reason why I said that was, you can go up, and this happens to all of us, and Dennis, how you doing? And Dennis is like, well, we had to put our dog to sleep, and the hemorrhoids are back. Like, whoa, like, how do you recover from that, right? Client takes it south, and you're like, geez. So by saying, Dennis, tell me something good.
Weather's great.
Sean?
Awesome to see you again.
Awesome to see you. And so typically, you'll see that your clients will tell you, give you Ford. They'll say, I just came back from an amazing 3-day conference in Santa Monica, saw Bush, just got back from vacation with my family, we went to the Bahamas. And you'll collect customer intelligence, but also stay on a more positive note. So, you know, we use Salesforce. Every CRM system we have ever worked with is customizable, and you could add a Ford tab to that. Before I get on a phone call with my clients, I'll pull up and look at their Ford that someone else might have entered. And people always laugh. I never knew what, because it says Recreation Coke. That's the drink, okay? There's two things I love American Express does that most of you probably know before you hang up. They say, is there anything else we can do for you, Mr. DeJulius? No, thanks for asking. We want to thank you for being a platinum member since 2007. I love that. Hang up. I say, they must talk about me every day. How do they know? It's right there on the software. So we bring it back. Our salon software, we have 350,000 guests in our database, but our top 2,000 are silver, gold, platinum. So now anytime you access them, you can personalize it. Say I gave you that 5% off your products. If you're a B2B and you have visitors coming to your office, having welcome signs. If you're only getting a few visitors a day or a week. It took my dog to get groomed. He has a welcome sign. Dogs get treated better than humans. 3, 2, 1. I love this, especially for B2B sales. They got to pick a time, let's say 8:30 on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. Once a week. They have to send out 3 emails, 2 cards, and make 1 phone call to an existing client or past that they're not currently engaged with, that they're not currently talking to. Dear JP, saw the Diamondbacks are playing well, you know, was through Scottsdale last week, didn't have any time, but made me think of you. Hope your spring, your family are off to a good start. And I just want to let you know, you're one of the reasons why I love what I do. No solicitation, no new book, new product, new this, discount, anything. Just keep your name in front of them. Teach your employees, but record it, right? So JP's not getting an email from me every week, getting a little nervous, right? But keeping your name in front of your clients in a non-soliciting way. Benson Kearley. I know Sean knows Stephen Kearley from Toronto. And he has a financial company. This guy is wicked smart. So he brings me out every year, and I speak to his staff. And recently, before I got to speak, all his account executives had to get up and say how they spent the Ford allowance. I had no idea what this was. They have to. It's a burden. Spend $25 a month on their clients. They're listening. So Frank gets up and says, well, you know, Mrs. Jones called in and I found out her mother-in-law passed away, sent her flowers. Cynthia gets up and says, well, I spent $5 gift certificate. And I sent it to one because his son just graduated from Duke, another one because she got promoted. But, I mean, that's really cool. Paying it, I mean, you're like hoping that they give you something. Really, really love it. Daniel Pink talked about this in his book, Drive. And up until I heard this story, if you had told me, if 2 people called me for advice, one I know really well and one I barely know, I would have told you I would have given them both the answer the same way to the best of my ability. I thought I would have until I read this. Group of radiologists split into 2 groups. Group 1, they give x-rays to, and they come back with a report. Findings. Group 2 gets the exact same x-rays plus pictures of him, information, just lost his wife 6 months ago, has kids, whatever. Group 2 found 3 times more. So up till now, all that proves to me is group 2 is just better radiologists. Same x-rays. A year later, they go back to group 2, give them the exact same x-rays, take away the personal information, and they found significantly less. Wow. It is scary. The other thing about Daniel Pink's book, his new book is When? Don't go to the ER in the afternoon, because that's when the highest malpractices are, and something about prostate exams, when to do that and when not to do it. People in hospitals wash their hand less as their shift goes on. Anyway, that really made me shocked that, you know, maybe, probably not maybe. I know Jim. If Jim calls me up and he has an issue, I'm probably going to think a lot harder. I'm going to probably make some phone calls. I'm probably going to spin it tonight, you know, as I sleep, if there's any other resources I have versus someone I don't have. So I used to think building a connection was purely to benefit you. Yeah, I like it. But it makes me a better it makes us a better professional. And this is another one of my favorites. So I'm sure you guys have all had this. When you're talking to a client, I like, you know, keeping the fort on them. And obviously they ask you questions and, you know, you answer, but you try to turn it back on them. I mean, that's what we should be doing with our clients. But personally, you ever meet someone You might be going out with your significant other and their friend from work and the spouse you don't know, and you sit down and for 2 hours I'm forwarding them. The end of the night, he couldn't tell you one thing about me. Couldn't tell you what I do, what I like to do. He loved talking about himself. So I call it the self-absorbed barometer. That probably means that's someone I want to invest more time with in the future socially, right? It's a good barometer. My son, when he went off to college, my oldest, he called me up. He said, "Dad, Ford's the greatest thing ever." I'm like, "You've never listened to a word I've said." He said, "It's the best way to meet girls." Glad I could help. It is mandatory in my company, the De Julius Group, that when we have our virtual support calls with anyone, they have to be Zoom. Now, if you do this, I would make it mandatory for two reasons. One, seeing someone is totally different, and you can collect forward because, you know, when I was talking to, different people, you see, you know, their degree on their wall, a picture of their family in front of a beach, and you start collecting for it. But the real reason, and I don't know if anybody else is guilty of this, is if we're not Zooming, I'm multitasking. I just get a text from my student at school, and he's in trouble, and I'm like, you know, and meanwhile, you just told me you got back from a funeral. I'm good, and I'm just like, you know. So Zooming makes me better, right? I highly recommend you do Zoom with all your clients and teach your sales staff and support staff and everyone to do that. Now, the customer doesn't have to choose to be on video, but we're always going to be on video, and it keeps us our egg. So this is what any one of your employees should be able to tell you at the end of the day about the people they interacted with.
David Smith.
Nancy Andrews.
Yep. What are you up to these days?
I'm married. I've got two great kids. You want to see their pictures?
Yes. Wow.
How about you?
Married, no kids yet. Work for Southern Community Bank. Bunch of great customers. Want to see their pictures?
Sure.
This is Alice. She owns a shoe store. This is Kevin. He's saving to buy a house.
That's knowing someone's Ford. That's focusing. Other part about the relationship economy. Are you zero risk to do business with? What zero risk doesn't mean is that you'll never drop the ball. That's not possible. What zero risk does mean is that you have created some protocols and systems that you drop the ball less than your competitors, but even more importantly, when you do drop the ball, you pick it up and make it right. Right, so Zappos, Amazon, they're zero risk. They send the wrong thing or you don't like it. It's not like you have to. Someone the other day in our academy said she called the company ready to do battle. Right? That's how a lot of people think. I don't want anybody to be worried about doing battle. So I've had a philosophy since I first opened my first business. If it gets to me, it's free. It's not hard to get to me. My phone number, my cell number is all over the salon. I'm not involved in the salons, but I post it everywhere. But my employees don't want it to get to me because whatever I give you is going to come out of their quarterly bonus. Because no one wants to call the GM, the president. No one wants to call you. If I got to track you down, I'm pissed. I've told 20 other people, I've posted about it, and now the fact that I got the CEO president on the phone, I probably have to embellish this to make it worthwhile. Instead of spilling coffee, I mean, she threw it in my face, right? I don't want, handle it, take care of it. So 20 years ago, a guest calls me up from the salons and says that we got hair color on her suit jacket. It's really bad. Should have had her taking it off and put a smock on. So I'm sorry, we'll get it dry cleaned. Can't try it. Can we replace it? No longer sell it. Can I send you a check for the suit? Because the suit's worthless without the jacket. She says, it's $250. Can I send you a check? Yeah. She goes, you don't want to see it? No. She goes, you don't want to hold it? No. Hung up, looked up her history after, and she's been coming for like 3 years at the time. Comes 7 times a year, about. Never referred anyone, never got anything for free. send her a $250 check plus a gift certificate for a one-hour massage or facial. Can't remember. Always told the story. About a year later, someone said, well, did you retain her? Like, that's a good question. Went and looked her up. She came another 7 times. Clicked on a referral. She referred 18 new people. For $250. What kind of advertising can you spend for $250 and get 18 new clients? Now I tell my employees to get color on everyone's clothes. Don't punish 98% of your customers for what you're afraid 2% are going to get away with. I'm okay with getting taken advantage of 2% at a time. I don't even think I do. Because what I'll get from the 98%, they can't believe that's the way we handled it. Like her. We waited in line for 45 minutes for this ride at MGM. We finally get up there. The cast member measures my oldest son at the time. He was like 6. And he was like a quarter of an inch too short. Says, you can't go on. My son starts crying. And the cast member, he had to be about 22, 23, bends down. He says, what's your name? My son says, Johnny. He goes, Johnny, listen, the next time you come to Disney, you'll probably be tall enough. And he gives him this, which is basically a line cut. He goes, you bring this next time you're here, you get to walk by all these people, present it to one of us, you'll go on right away. How cool is that? Now, here's what I would have done with my service aptitude at 22, 23. I would have said, Dad, Mom, get your sniveling, whiny kid out of my face. It's not my fault he's not tall enough. It's not my fault you somehow missed the 6 signs on the way up here, how tall you're supposed to be. I get tired of this. This happens to me 5 times an hour. But here's what Disney gets better than I got, better than most. While it's not our fault, it's still our problem. And there are so many things that aren't our fault, but are our problem. And you have to do work on that. You got to work on that. Don't win the argument, but lose the customer. We've taken the saying literally, and we say, everything is our problem. If a plane crashes, it's our problem. Not our fault, but listen, if that's part of your experience, you're coming back. So I'll give you a really good example that I want you to figure out yours. At the salon, I go in for services, that's it. So one time I go in, and I'm getting a massage, and I open the locker, and there's this negative cue. We are not responsible for longings left behind. And I'm pissed. No negative cues. Why are we doing it? Well, because, John, people keep their cell phones, their watches, their jewelry, and they leave them in their robes. And sometimes they forget them, and we don't catch them, and we'll wash them. I don't care. If someone calls me up and says, we washed their iPhone, I'm getting them a new one. So the first thing they did was they changed the sign to more of a slightly better, but more of a courtesy than a threat. But we got to solve the problem of people on occasion leaving something valuable in the ropes. So I said, everything's our problem. This is our problem. So one of the answers was, well, let's hire more people to go through robes and pockets. No, no, I don't like that, right? Because there's always a chance of human error, and I don't want to increase payroll unless it's going to have a significant impact. Anyone know what we did? Ordered pocketless robes. Problem solved. And they were cheaper. So here's what I challenge you. Where can you find your pocketless robes, right? Where you eliminate it from even happening. Because we can get a pissy message. That was our fault. There was a sign, you know, he's not coming back. He's not wanting to do business. This is a big part of your employee training. Employees cannot understand why clients get emotional, irrational. And it is rational for customers to be irrational. Emotions outpower and manipulate customers' reasoning, and emotions lead to action. One of the most confusing and frustrating things is to employees, the unreasonable way customers can react to something that seems so minor. However, when a customer has expectations, not unrealistic expectations, but simple ones about it, how it will be like to do business with you, and you fail, the customer can get emotional. So You're the one business I can always count on. I'm having a shitty day, but I can always count on your business. And you drop the ball, and I get irate. Employees need to know not to take it personally. It's critical that customer emotions be part of employee service recovery, especially for dissatisfied customers. Once employees understand there's a good probability of a customer reacting emotionally instead of rationally, they won't take it personally, and they're better able to make a brilliant comeback.
Be nice. Come on. If somebody gets in your face, I want you to be nice.
Okay.
Ask him to walk. Be nice. If he won't walk, walk him. But be nice. If you can't walk him, one of the others will help you, and you'll both be nice. I want you to remember that it's a job. It's nothing personal.
Seth Godin says, a lot of times we can't outspend, outthink, outwork our competition, but we can outlove them. So here's something I've taken from that. We have customer appreciation meetings, and it's not what you think. No customers are there. And so what we do at these meetings is we say, all right, everyone has to tell us who your top two, three favorite customers are, clients that you do business. Stand up and tell us, and why. And so she'll be like, you know, Sean from Home Mag. I love talking to him. He's so, and I think I've screwed up three appointments in 7 years. And all three times it was with Sean. And you couldn't believe how cool and understanding he was, right? I love Sean. So everyone goes around the room, and then we all leave saying, man, we got good customers, versus the opposite way. Versus in the back room, you wouldn't believe that cheap SOB complained because he's trying to get something for free. And then someone else says, yeah, I got one that does it. And then you say, and then that 2% feels like it's 70%. Have your employees talk about their favorite customers. So they start reminding them how lucky they are about that. Nothing will ruin a company's customer experience faster than rapid growth. Getting hired at your company in any economy should be the hardest thing. I call that 30-foot high fence with barbed wire. How to make your interview process ungameable. A great article in New York Times. The CEO of Charles Schwab. I forget his name. I highly recommend everyone. It's about a month old. Getting it. His interview is just fantastic. One of the things he does when it's a senior leader hire where he's involved, he takes him out to a restaurant and has the restaurant purposely screw up a bunch of times because he wants to see how you handle it. That's great. How someone handles stress. We've learned this. Our first interview for frontline people, we have group interviews. So you want to make it ungameable. And so I don't want to waste six, not me, but my hiring, don't want to waste 6 hours with six people on the first interview. But what the employee, so we'll say, all right, tell us a time when you went above and beyond, whatever the question is. What the employees think that we're looking at is who has the best answer. What we're looking at is that when she's talking, what is she doing? She's peeking at her watch. See if she got a message. She's checked out. He's smiling and not making her feel very, that's what we're looking for. And then finally, the engagement indicator. We count the 5 E's during an interview. How many times do you have eye contact? Smile, enthusiastic greet. Now the key to this is the interviewer has to be doing those things or the employee will never do it. It's time to build a relationship with yourself.
I have 422 friends, yet I'm lonely. I speak to all of them every day, yet none of them really know me. The problem I have sits in the spaces between, looking into their eyes or at a name on a screen. I took a step back and opened my eyes. I looked around and realised that this media we call social is anything but. When we open our computers and it's our doors we shut. All this technology we have, it's just an illusion. Community, companionship, a sense of inclusion. Yet when you step away from this device of delusion, you awaken to see a world of confusion. A world where we're slaves to the technology we mastered, where information gets sold by some rich, greedy bastard. A world of self-interest, self-image, self-promotion, where we all share our best bits but leave out the emotion. We're at our most happy with an experience we share, but is it the same if no one is there? Be there for your friends, and they'll be there too, but no one will be if a group message will do. We edit and exaggerate, crave adulation. We pretend not to notice the social isolation. We put our words into order until our lives are glistening. We don't even know if anyone is listening. Being alone isn't a problem. Let me just emphasise, if you read a book, paint a picture, or do some exercise, you're being productive and present, not reserved and recluse. You're being awake and attentive and putting your time to good use. So when you're in public and you start to feel alone, put your hands behind your head, step away from the phone. You don't need to stare at your menu or at your contact list. Just talk to one another. Learn to coexist. I can't stand to hear the silence of a busy commuter train where no one wants to talk through the fear of looking insane. We're becoming unsocial. It no longer satisfies to engage with one another and look into someone's eyes. We're surrounded by children who, since they were born, have watched us living like robots and think it's the norm. It's not very likely you'll make world's greatest dad if you can't entertain a child without using an iPad. When I was a child, I'd never be home. Be out with my friends on our bikes, we would roam. I'd wear holes in my trainers and graze up my knees. We'd build our own clubhouse high up in the trees. Now the park's so quiet, it gives me a chill. See no children outside and the swings hanging still. There's no skipping, no hopscotch, no church and no steeple. We're a generation of idiots, smartphones and dumb people. So look up from your phone, shut down the display. Take in your surroundings, make the most of today. Just one real connection is all it can take to show you the difference that being there can make. Be there in the moment that she gives you the look that you remember forever as when love overtook. The time she first holds your hand or first kiss your lips. The time you first disagree but still love her to bits. The time you don't have to tell hundreds of what you've just done because you want to share this moment with just this one. The time you sell your computer so you can buy a ring for the girl of your dreams who is now the real thing. The time you want to start a family and the moment when you first hold your little girl and get to fall in love again. The time she keeps you up at night and all you want is rest, and the time you wipe away the tears as your baby flees the nest. The time your baby girl returns with a boy for you to hold, and the time he calls you granddad and makes you feel real old. The time you take in all you've made just by giving life attention, and how you're glad you didn't waste it by looking down at some invention. The time you hold your wife's hand, sit down beside her bed. You tell her that you love her, play a kiss upon her head. She then whispers to you quietly, as her heart gives a final beat, that she's lucky she got stopped by that lost boy in the street. But none of these times ever happened. You never had any of this. When you're too busy looking down, you don't see the chances you miss. So look up from your phone, shut down those displays. We have a finite existence, a set number of days. Don't waste your life getting caught in the net, as when the end comes, nothing's worse than regret. I am guilty too of being part of this machine, this digital world we are heard but not seen, where we type as we talk and we read as we chat, where we spend hours together without making eye contact. So don't give in to a life where you follow the hype. Give people your love, don't give them your like. Disconnect from the need to be heard and defined. Go out into the world, leave distractions behind. Look up from your phone, shut down that display. Stop watching this video, live life the real way.
That video is called Look Up. Get it down, get it off YouTube, show it to your kids, show it to your employees. Watch it yourself 100 times. The last thing I want to share with you is you want to build long-term sustainable relationships. Give more. I love these two words. I wish I could get them tattooed on my forehead. Give more to your employees, to your company, to your customers, to your vendors. Giving more than is expected. We all live in a very cynical society today. And the deal is, our agreement says that you have to do A, B, and C, and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Most of us wait because we don't trust. Once you do A, B, and C, I'll do X, Y, Z. What I try to teach myself, my employees, my clients, my three boys, is to do X, Y, and Z first and throw in W. Even though W wasn't expected, wasn't part of the deal, give more. That means if you borrow someone's pickup truck to move furniture, give them that pickup truck with more gas and cleaner than how they gave it to you. And I think CEO coaching embodies the give more. Mark and team, thank you for allowing me to come in. I want to welcome everyone to the relationship economy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.